Investiture of the Gods, Chapter 33.
General Huang Feihu, the Marshal King, you know, as he's fleeing King Zhu's capital, Chosh.
Yeah, he's already made it through five passes, which is incredible in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But this sixth one, Jipai Pass, it's different.
How so?
Well, it's personal, deeply personal. The commander here, it's his own father, General Huang Gun, fiercely loyal to the dynasty.
Oof. Okay, so Feihu's group approaches.
Yeah.
What happens? The sources mention something pretty specific, right?
They do. As they get close, Feihu's lieutenants, Huang Ming and Zhu Ji, they spot Huang Gun's forces ready for them. And crucially, they see a D.
A prisoner cart.
A heavy prisoner cart.
Yeah.
Yeah. That tells them everything they need to know.
No welcome party then.
Definitely not. It signals, you know, immediate hostility. The father isn't there to help his son escape. He's there to drag him back for execution.
Wow.
Oh. And that image, it really sets up what we need to explore in this deep dive for you. It's this just agonizing choice.
Right.
On one side, you've got Huang Gun representing seven generations of loyalty. It's this absolute inherited code. But Feihu is running from the reality of King Zhu, this lawless, tyrannical ruler.
So it's tradition versus the awful reality.
Pretty much. And we need to unpack how a few of Feihu's loyal subordinates managed to flip the script, essentially forcing the entire family to commit treason. It's extraordinary.
Let's get right into that confrontation then. Feihu approaches his father. How does that go down? Does he try to reason with him?
He tries humility. He calls himself an unfilial son, clearly, you know, shaken by the situation. But Huang Gun, he won't even look at him, won't acknowledge him.
Cold.
Ice cold. And then he just lays into him. So not just anger, it's this profound indictment of everything Feihu represents now.
What does he say?
He calls him a beast, basically saying he's less than human, that he's thrown away his honor. And a rebel, a wicked traitor.
That's harsh, even for an angry father.
It is, but you have to understand the context, that historical weight. It's huge.
Right, the seven generations of loyalty.
Exactly. Seven generations showered with royal favor. They were the pillars holding up the Shang dynasty.
Wow.
So in Huang Gun's eyes, Feihu has chucked it all away. Seven generations of prestige over what he sees as a personal slight over one woman.
So the loyalty isn't just political, it's like cosmic,
yeah.
Part of their family identity.
It's almost genetic, yeah. And because of that, Huang Gun feels he has to offer this impossible ultimatum. It's designed to protect his own honor, even if it means his son dies.
Okay, what are the choices he gives Feihu? I'm guessing neither is good.
Not at all. Option one, surrender. Get off your horse, let me tie you up, and I'll take you back to Chaosh.
And the upside for Huang Gun is?
He gets credit for capturing his rebel son, Chisnu. His loyalty is proven, he survives, the family's official honor sort of remains intact. Feihu pays the price, but the lineage continues its loyal service, in theory.
Okay, and option two, if Feihu refuses to surrender.
Then Huang Gun says, you take your spear and you kill me. Right here, right now.
Ooh, kill his own father.
Yes. He argues it would spare him, Huang Gun, the shame of seeing being dragged off in chains at his old age because of his son's treason.
That's unbelievable pressure. Choose execution or commit patricide.
Exactly. And faced with that, Feihu just breaks. The sources say he's speechless. He decides to surrender. He tells his father, you don't need to condemn me. I'll get down. Take me to Choij. He's ready to die.
He chooses death over killing his father.
He does. And for a moment, it looks like tradition, that immense weight of loyalty, has won. But
his lieutenants have other ideas.
They certainly do. Just as Feihu is about to dismount, Huang Ming shouts, older brother, don't get down. He completely interrupts the surrender.
And he has an argument, right? Not just a desperate plea.
Oh, a powerful one. He brings in this ancient principle, the bedrock of the ruler-minister relationship.
The ruler treats the minister with respect. The minister serves the ruler with loyalty.
Exactly. It's reciprocal. A contract. And Huang Ming's point is devastatingly simple. King Zhu broke the contract first.
Because he's not ruling with respect. He's cruel, lawless.
Precisely. He's inverted the whole natural order. So Huang Ming argues the loyalty obligation, it's void. Loyalty to a tyrant isn't loyalty. It's foolishness.
That makes logical sense, but is it enough to sway the father?
Well, Huang Ming doesn't stop there. He makes it personal, brutally personal.
Mm-hmm.
He turns to Huang Gun and basically says, why are you defending the man who destroyed your own family?
He brings up Feihu's wife and daughter.
Yes. The king humiliated Huang Gun's daughter-in-law and killed his granddaughter. Huang Ming demands to know how the father can prioritize some abstract, ancient loyalty over avenging his own blood.
That's a powerful point.
And then he twists the knife with that proverb as used.
Even a fierce tiger doesn't eat its young.
Right. He's telling Huang Gun to his face, you're acting worse than a wild animal by sending your son to his death for this king.
How does Huang Gun react to that?
Predictably, with fury.
Hmm.
He accuses Huan Ming of having a rebel's clever tongue, of corrupting his son, and he attacks him with his saber.
Okay, so violence erupts.
Which is exactly what the lieutenants needed. Chaos.
Nah.
Huang Ming, Zhu Ji, Long Quan, and Wu Qian immediately surround Huang Gun, kind of pinning him down in the confusion.
But diversion.
A very effective one. While the father is occupied, they're yelling at Fei Hu, go now! And Fei Hu, his sons, grandsons, all the family carts, they rush through the pass gate.
So they basically use the fight with the father as cover to get Fei Hu out.
Wow. They essentially kidnap their own commanding officer's attention.
It's audacious. Strategic coercion at its finest. But it's not over yet. Once Fei Hu is clear, Huang Gun realizes what's happened. He's been tricked, his authority bypassed by his own men.
He must be absolutely livid and ashamed. Devastated. So much so that he falls off his horse and tries to kill himself right there. Draws his sword to slit his own throat.
Whoa! Does anyone stop him?
Huang Ming does. He wrestles the sword away. And this is where Huang Ming plays his masterstroke. He knows he can't just force Huang Gun to defect. He needs to engineer it.
How? What does he do?
He lies. Brilliantly. He pretends he was on Huang Gun's side all along. He claims, look, I only helped Fei Hu get through the pass so we could trap him here together.
A fake double cross. Okay.
He convinces Huang Gun to play along with the plan. Pretend to agree to go with Fei Hu to Shi Qi, the Western territories.
Mm.
Lure them back into the pass compound for a feast. Make them feel safe.
And then?
Then, Huang Gun will strike a chem, a golden bell. That's the signal for the four generals, Huang Ming and the others, to seize Fei Hu and the whole family and haul them back to Chaish.
Okay, that sounds like a plan Huang Gun could get behind. Restore his honor, capture the rebels.
Exactly. It appeals to his trapped sense of loyalty. Except.
Except Huang Ming and the others aren't actually going to do it.
Not a chance. This is the real double cross. Huang Gun agrees. They set up the feast. Fei Hu comes back in. Huang Gun strikes the golden bell, the signal to attack.
And Huang
Ming just ignores it. He makes excuses. Oh, the executioners aren't ready, or the timing isn't quite right. Stalling.
Buying time. But for what?
For the irreversible step. While Huang Ming is stalling Huang Gun, the other two loyal lieutenants, Long Huan and Wu Qian, are busy. They load up all of Huang Gun's personal wealth, his oin, onto carts.
Oh, okay. Taking his stuff.
And then the kicker.
Yeah.
They set fire to the eat. The huge granary. The pass's entire food and fodder supply.
Why is burning the granary so decisive?
Because it eliminates any possibility of Huang Gun going back. If the supplies were intact, maybe he could still return to charge, explain things away, get resupplied. But with the granary blazing, treason is undeniable. He let the pass supplies burn.
There's no explaining that away.
None. So now, the four generals can drop the act. They confront Huang Gun. We were joking. We forced your hand. The granary is gone. If you go back to Chaoge now, you'll be executed along with everyone else for this failure.
They burned his bridges for him, literally.
Exactly. They tell him, the only option left, the only pur, the best strategy now, is to come with us to Shi Qi. Join King Wu, the list of a benevolent, wise, virtuous ruler. Defection is now the only path to survival.
Wow. That is intense manipulation, but for his own good, arguably.
It's incredibly dramatic. And you see the weight of it land on Huang Gun. He fought it tooth and nail, clinging to those seven generations of loyalty.
So what does he do, finally?
He accepts the inevitable, but it's deeply tragic. He knows he's now a rebellious deserter. He turns towards the capital. Chao Zhen bows 8 times, lamenting his fate.
A final goodbye to his old life.
Pretty much. And then he performs this symbolic act. He takes off Izari Chess's heavy general seal and hangs it up in the Silver Peace Hall of the Pass. His service to the Shang Dynasty is officially over.
End of an era for him, personally.
Absolutely. So the group leaves Jipai Pass. Huang Gun, his 3,000 soldiers, join Fei Hu's group. So now they're over 4,000 strong. He chose family, but, you know, under extreme pressure.
So they overcame this massive moral and familial hurdle. But the journey's not over. Where do they head next?
The next major checkpoint is Sishuiguan, Sishui Pass. It's guarded by a general named Han Rong.
Another obstacle.
Yes, but Huang Gun immediately warns them about the real threat there. It's not Han Rong himself, but one of his subordinates.
Oh. Who's that?
A general named Yuhua. And Huang Gun calls him the Duhua.
The seven-headed general. Okay, that sounds concerning.
It is. Because Yuhua isn't just a skilled warrior. Huang Gun explains he practices Kriyurai heterodox magic. Forbidden arts.
So we're moving into the supernatural realm now.
We really are. This Yuhua, he rides a Yuhua of a fire-eyed, golden-eyed beast, some kind of magical creature. And he wields a magical weapon, a kind of halberd. Huang Gun is terrified. He basically says, all our cleverness, our numbers, our arguments about loyalty, none of it matters against this guy's magic. He could capture us all instantly.
So the nature of the threat has just completely shifted from politics and family loyalty to magic beasts and spells.
Exactly. The game just changed dramatically.
Huang Feihu, the Wucheng King, he's on his famous mount, the Five-Colored Divine Ox.
Iconic. And he's heading away from Chou's, the capital, towards the rising power of Zhu. Sometimes called Kizu in the text.
And waiting for him, Yuhua.
Ah, Yuhua. The description is fantastic. Face like gilded gold, red beard, monster eyes. He sounds, well, not quite human even from the description.
Definitely stands out. And his banner basically says, I'm Yuhua, I always succeed. Confidence, right?
Absolutely. He's the embodiment of loyalty to his post, to the pass itself.
So Feihu tries reason first. He lays out his case for treason, essentially. Says King Zhu's lost the mandate of heaven, morally bankrupt, that he's actually shamed to be a minister under him now.
He's framing it as a moral imperative, not just politics. And he backs it up strategically, too. He says, look, Zhu already controls 2/3 of the realm.
Right, arguing it's basically destiny unfolding, not just human action. So he asks Yuhua to just, you know, step aside, let fate take its course.
But Yuhua isn't buying any of it. Zero interest in the mandate of heaven talk.
No cosmic significance for him.
None. For him, it's purely about duty. His response is basically, surrender. Go back to Chaoyuan. Maybe the king will show mercy. That's the procedure.
He sees Feihu as just another rebel, ignoring the bigger picture Feihu's painting.
Exactly. And he uses that analogy, telling Feihu that fighting his way through is like climbing a tree to catch a fish. Utterly futile. Yuan Mukiyu.
That's pretty condescending.
Oh, incredibly. And that dismissal, that complete refusal to acknowledge Feihu's cause or honor, that's what makes Feihu snap. He's furious. He attacks.
And initially, it looks like skill might win the day. The duel starts, and it's intense. Feihu is a master warrior.
He really is. The text says his spear moves like a silver python. He pushes Yuhua back, corners him. It looks like a classic martial victory is about to happen.
Like the old ways still work. For a minute.
Just for a minute. Because Yuhua isn't retreating out of fear or defeat. It's tactical. He needs space.
To do what?
To use his ace in the hole. He drops his weapon, reaches into his pouch, and pulls out the Lifting Soul Banner, the Luhun Fan.
Okay, so here's the thing that gets me. Feihu is fighting for what seems like the right side. He's clearly the better fighter in conventional terms. Why does this left path side gate magic, Suodao Pengmen Ziwu, work so well? Isn't that stuff usually weaker?
That's the kicker, isn't it? That's the paradox this whole episode throws at you. Yes, the text labels it left path side gate. It comes from the one key immortal of Penglai Island, which sounds a bit, you know, unorthodox.
Morally dubious, maybe.
Definitely carries that connotation. But here's the brutal truth the story presents. Its moral status has zero bearing on its effectiveness. It works perfectly.
How does it work? What happens?
Yuhua just raises the banner. That's it. Several streams of black energy shoot out, envelop Feihu, and he's gone.
Gone? Like, killed?
No, not killed. The text says he's lifted away and basically thrown down near the enemy camp gates. Captured. Instantly. No fight. No struggle against the magic itself.
Wow! Just neutralized.
Yeah.
The great Huang Feihu, taken down by a flag.
Imagine the psychological shock. And that's the end of Act 1. They drag Feihu before Han Rong, the commander of the pass.
Does he break? Does he kneel?
Not a chance. Even captured, Feihu stands tall, refuses to kneel. He tells Han Rong he's just a functionary, someone who borrows the Son of Heaven's prestige. His spirit is definitely still there.
But his body is imprisoned, and the family's honor is now tied to this magic banner.
Exactly. And back at their camp, when Wang Gan hears the news, he's devastated. But the others, his sons, grandsons, loyal officers, they're furious.
They can't accept it, right? Defeated by a trick.
No way. They see it as evil magic, a cheap shot. They have to avenge Feihu, rescue him. And this is where it gets really grim, really repetitive.
Because they try, one after another.
Yes, and the source really hammers home the futility. Mm-hmm. It's a systematic dismantling of martial pride.
Okay, walk us through it. Who goes first?
First up are Huang Ming and Zhu Ji. Good, solid warriors. They ride out, engage Yu Hua.
How long do they last?
The text says not up to 30 rounds, so a decent fight. Then...
Let me guess, Yu Hua retreats.
Yep, pulls back, raises the banner, black energy, both captured, just like that.
Even though they must have known it was coming?
They absolutely knew. But knowing didn't help. That's the point the story seems to be making. Knowing about the magic doesn't grant immunity.
Okay, who's next? This is rough.
Next, Wang Feibiao and Huang Feibao. They ride out specifically calling Yu Hua out for using evil magic. They know exactly what they're facing.
And they fight him.
For about 20 rounds. Good showing of skill. Then Yu Hua pulls the same move. Banner up. Black energy. Sun's captured.
It's like watching a terrible replay. The Huang family name, synonymous with martial skill, just being erased.
Erased by a gimmick, essentially. Yeah. It completely devalues their entire tradition, their lifetime of training. It's like this story saying, that era, it's over. Human skill doesn't decide things anymore.
Is anyone left? Do they keep trying?
Oh, they do. Loyalty runs deep. Long Huan and Wu Qin go next. They're determined, talking about not being scared by the left path technique.
Let me fast forward. 20 rounds, banner, captured.
You got it. Exactly the same. So let's count. That's Fei Hu plus Huang Ming, Zhu Ji, Fei Biao, Fei Bao, Long Huan, Wu Qin. Seven generals.
Seven experienced warriors taken out in four quick battles by the exact same trick.
Yu Hua doesn't need to be better. He just needs the banner. It's the ultimate unfair advantage.
It really does make you question the whole value of skill and training, doesn't it? Why bother if a magic flag beats you every time?
And that leads us to the last and probably most heartbreaking attempt. The only fighter left is Huang Xianlu.
Fei Hu's son. Wait, no, grandson, right. How old is he?
Second grandson, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's only 13 or 14 years old. Just a kid.
Oh, no. Huang Gun lets him go.
He does. He's heartbroken, knows it's probably hopeless. Mm. But Xianlu insists.
And the boy fights.
He fights like a prodigy.
Yeah.
The text is glowing. Spear technique like a god. Fears like a newborn calf. Like a tiger. He's incredibly talented despite his age.
Does he stand a chance? A glimmer of hope, maybe?
Actually, yes. For a moment, there's a real flash of brilliance. Xianlu seems to realize he can't beat the banner, but maybe he can beat the man.
Smart kid.
Very. He uses a special move, the phoenix entering Kunlun, and manages to actually wound Yu Hua. Strikes his left leg. A clean hit.
He did it. Human skill found a way.
It did find a way to wound the wielder, but not to stop the artifact.
Oh, no, no, don't tell me.
Xianlu presses his advantage, pursues the injured Yu Hua, but Yu Hua, even in pain, manages to get the lifting soul banner up one last time.
And the black energy.
Strikes again. Xianlu is captured, and Fei Hu, watching his young grandson fall to the same magic that got him. The text says he just weeps openly. That's the breaking point. That's utterly devastating. Mm. The last hope, gone.
For Huang Gan, seeing that, it's the end. He knows fighting is just suicide now. He's only got two little grandsons left, Tianzhu and Tiangxing. His entire lineage is on the brink.
So what does he do? What can he do?
He chooses surrender, but in a way that tries to salvage some shred of dignity or at least avoid the ultimate shame of capture for himself and the last boys.
Oh.
He says he doesn't want his lifetime reputation ruined by being taken prisoner by this left path demon.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes off his armor, his helmet, his belt, all the symbols of his rank and martial identity.
Strips himself bare, symbolically.
Exactly. And he dresses in plain white clothes, gaosu, the color of mourning or sometimes simplicity. Surrender.
Showing he's no longer a warrior resisting.
Right. Then he takes his two remaining grandsons, kneels outside Han Rong's command post gates, just kneels there in the dust, and he offers up his entire treasury, gold, valuables, everything he brought with him. He explicitly says he wants to buy a way out. He's not negotiating as a general anymore. He's begging, ransoming his family's survival. Wow, from the peak of the military elite to a supplicant in white robes, offering treasure to save his last descendants, all because of one magic banner.
And the source just leaves it there, hanging.